All right, welcome into hour number two of the VGK Insider Show. No Darren Millard, no Ryan Wallace, Chris Chapman filling in along with Lindsey Brown, getting you set for the Vegas Golden Knights and their penultimate game against Chicago Blackhawks. Second time we've gotten to see Chicago come into town, but it was a long time ago. I think it was Nevada Day, if I'm not mistaken. Blackhawks won that game in overtime. But here to help us get you set for this game, we're going to bring in Mark Lazarus from The Athletic. And Mark, senior writer with The Athletic as well. You've been covering the Blackhawks for a long time, and thanks for jumping on with us.
Happy to do it.
All right. First of all, I'm excited because I know you're a Northwestern grad. I got to get the little plug in here. My kid actually looking at going to Northwestern. We visited the school a couple years ago, and he fell in love with it. So that's one of his now life goals. And as a father, I'm pushing him to be a Wildcat. So
love to hear it.
Yeah, thanks, man. So you've been lucky enough to follow Connor Bedard his entire rookie season. I would say it was impossible for him to live up to the standards that I think people set for him. But just what have you seen from him, and how has he grown from game one to game 80?
I mean, the amazing thing is I think he really has lived up to the hype. I mean, I don't think anybody expected him to come in and score 110 points or anything like that. But for him to be almost a point-a-game guy, as an eight, he's the 13th youngest player in NHL history. Wow. He doesn't turn 19 until like closer to next season, late July. Like it's hard to underscore enough just how young he is. For him to be doing what he's doing is pretty remarkable, especially when you just look around him. He's got nobody to play with, right? I mean, you know, he's got some. You know, he's turned Philip Kurashev into a 60-point guy. He's resurrected Nick Foligno's offensive career. He's going to be a 20-goal scorer. He's played with guys like Ryan Donato and Anthony Beauvillier, guys that can't even crack the lineup in some other teams. So for him to be doing what he's doing is pretty remarkable. Now, from the beginning of the season to now, we're starting to see a little bit of defense from him. I mean, there was virtually none at the start of the season. Nobody expected there to be. There wasn't the demand of it. But, you know, as we get ready for next season, which is all you can think about when you're in Chicago right now, if you want to start seeing him take a little bit more responsibility in his own end. And it's baby steps. I mean, everyone points to the fact that he's like a minus 41. Again, that has a lot to do with the team he's on. But he does need to take care of the puck better in his own end and be a little more responsible, and he'll get there. He's 18 years old. We've seen very few defensively responsible 18-year-olds in the NHL.
Yeah, and Mark, I seem to remember in the early days of Jonathan Toews and Patrick Kane that they let those guys kind of fly around and figure things out before reining in, because you got to get to know the speed, you got to get to know the league, and everybody likes to talk about Connor Bedard's shot, which his release is incredibly unique. It's going to be great to see how that develops as he grows into his body a little bit more as well. But we saw some people trying to get after him high in the zone. That's obviously how he broke his jaw with a little bit of a high hit. But how have defenses changed to kind of manipulate him into areas that he's not as big of a threat? And is there an area on the ice where that's considered for him?
Well, that's the thing, is if you're matching up against the Blackhawks, you don't have to worry about literally anybody else, right? Mm-hmm. You look at this lineup and you just load up against Bedard. He's been facing some of the toughest minutes in the league all year long in terms of quality of competition. So that's, you know, more that he's had to fight through. And they are getting a little more physical with him. We've seen, since he's come back from the broken jaw, a little bit more physicality on him. He's slippery. He's not the fastest guy in the world, but he's slippery. He has that Patrick Kane ability to just kind of, you know, slide off of contact. He's very aware of his surroundings. He's good at finding open ice. So he manages to work around everybody game planning for him. It's a great point you make about Toews and Kane. And when, you know, back when Dennis Savard was coach of the Blackhawks and those guys are rookies, he just threw Kane and Toews and Patrick Sharp in the top line and said, go nuts. Learn how to score in the NHL. We'll teach you defense later.
Now, you kind of mentioned some of the guys that he's played with, and I don't think initially it was the plan for him to play with guys like Donato or Khrushchev. Taylor Hall was obviously brought in. Corey Perry was also there as well. So how has he adjusted to playing with different guys? Because, I mean, it seems like he's gone through an awful lot as a rookie, and you mentioned how young he is, and it just seems like it would take a lot of maturity for someone to be able to adjust so quickly.
Yeah, he's very fortunate that he's really found some really good chemistry with Philip Kurashev. And Kurashev, you know, he's been in the league for a few years now. I think this is his fifth season. He's always shown some kind of offensive ability, but the Blackhawks always had him pegged as more of like a third liner, kind of a more defensive-minded guy. And yeah, the chemistry he has with Bedard, it's legit. It's really unlocked him. He's threatening 20 goals. He's threatening 60 points. He's having a really nice year, and he's really showing that offense. So the interesting thing is, you know, the Blackhawks have all these prospects coming in, right? And, you know, the assumption is that Philip Kurashev was a stopgap. But imagine if he can stay on that top line, and all of a sudden you could put Frank Nazar and Oliver Moore on the second line when they come in, and you still have Taylor Hall running around. And this team could get pretty deep pretty quickly if someone like Philip Kurashev can be a top-line guy. And that's what Bedard's been able to do. I mean, it's unusual to look to a literal child to unlock someone on your team, but that's what he's been able to do, is really turn Philip Kurashev into a weapon.
Yeah, I think a lot of people forget that Taylor Hall did win a Hart Trophy not too long ago. So
yeah.
Certainly a guy who maybe he could gel with as well.
He was supposed to be Bedard's left wing. That was the point. The point of bringing him in was, okay, this is a former number one pick, and he's a good quality. He's a guy who can play on the top line, and he wanted to prove that he still had top line ability left after playing more of a depth role in Boston. So for him to get hurt, and he was hurt right away. He was dealing with some back stuff and some shoulder stuff, and then it blew out the knee. He's never been at full strength. So there's some optimism in Hawk circles that, you know, when the season starts next year and they've got a healthy Taylor Hall on his wing, that it's going to really, you know, take that to the next level.
Well, and we're talking to Mark Lazarus from The Athletic here on the VGK Insider Show, and we talk about that long rebuild, the trajectory for this team, and you're going to have to learn how to play different styles, different pacings. What do you envision that to be next year? Are they going to try to be more of a barnstorming team that's going to try to take you by surprise, a little bit more rush-heavy and opportunism, or do you expect a little bit more of a methodical approach as they start to add different responsibilities into their young core and asking more of them?
Yeah, it's funny. I asked Luke Richardson that this morning. Like, what does he see as the future identity of this team? And you know, the players don't know. They just honestly don't know what this team's going to look like, because you don't know which of these prospects are really going to pan out. You know, Frank Nazar came in. He's the number 13 pick overall a few years ago. He's the guy they basically traded Kirby Dock for. And he scored in his first game. Looks great. He looked great at Michigan. There's a lot of hope that he could be a big player, but you just don't know yet. So the identity that Kyle Davidson, the GM, wants to build is kind of a relentlessness. I think you look at like Carolina and the way they play with speed, and they just never let up, and they're so aggressive on the forecheck. I think that's what Luke Richardson wants this team to be, but you have to have the horses to do that. And the Blackhawks, they just really don't know if they can play that way, or they have to play more of like an LA Kings style and kind of clog up the neutral zone. I mean, they're still probably 2 or 3 years away from really being where they want to be down the road with all these prospects coming through. So we just won't know for a while. In the meantime, they're trying to develop that kind of relentless hustle identity, which is really the only way you can close the talent gap when the talent gap is this wide.
Now, speaking of closing the talent gap, the Blackhawks do figure to have a pretty high draft pick. Actually, the draft will be here in Las Vegas over the summer.
Oh,
but,
yeah.
You know, a couple of guys that could potentially be joining Connor Bedard, Macklin Celebrini or Anton Seleyev, who both are really highly regarded prospects and figure to probably be the number one and number two pick in this year's draft. So how much excitement is there for maybe to potentially get one of those guys as well?
Well, there's certainly excitement for it, but it's kind of funny. Like, last year was, you know, the tank season, obviously, was so singularly obsessed with Bedard. That's all fans cared about. That's all that mattered. And then once they won that one, it's like it feels like the pressure's almost eased off a little bit. They're like, oh, we'll get a good pick. We'll have a top. They're guaranteed a top four pick. They're locked into the second best lottery odds. So they're going to get a good player. They could get Levshinov, the defenseman. They can get Demidov, the exciting Russian forward. There's options for them there now. That they're going to get someone good. They don't need Macklin Celebrini the way they needed Connor Bedard, right? So the pressure on the draft lottery is kind of eased off a little bit. They know they're going to get someone good, and it's not the end of the world if they don't win the lottery this year, whereas last year it would have been the end of the world.
That's the voice of Mark Lazarus from The Athletic, covers the Chicago Blackhawks. And Mark, I want to switch gears a little bit, but you were pretty vocal, and you were very, I think, at the forefront of the situation with the Blackhawks involving Kyle Beach. And today the news comes out that the Canadiens are promoting a player who was involved in some other nefarious things, and it comes on the heels of five NHL players potentially facing the consequences for a sexual assault that occurred at the World Junior Championships. So when you see the news out of Montreal, I guess for me it's disappointing to see, and it makes me think that maybe as a league we haven't learned anything. But when you see something like that, just what is your initial thought?
It's hockey, right? I mean, you just kind of resign to it. I just wrote a column about Joel Quenneville, who's probably going to be, you know, I'm guessing reinstated in the very near future, or at least sometime in the near future. And, you know, he is one of the ones in that room that swept the Kyle Beach allegations under the rug. So this is what hockey does. You know, you can frame it as you're giving people second chances, or you could frame it the way that I think most of us do, which is just disappointing that hockey never seems to take a stand against the kind of broken culture that it is. And I, you're talking about Logan Mailloux. And, you know, look, I'm not here to sit there and say someone who does something horrible as a 17-year-old to be condemned to, you know, jail for the rest of his life. Maybe he has done the work, just like Joel Quenneville has done work behind the scenes. He's talked to the people you need to talk to. He's tried to open his mind, open his heart. I understand all that. That's great. But the NHL is a privilege. You know, it's not, it's you don't have to give someone a chance in the NHL. You don't have to hire someone with that track record. You don't have to promote someone with that track record. You could find somebody else. There's 1.6 million hockey players in the world, and there are hundreds of qualified coaches that could coach in the NHL right now. So it's disappointing when the NHL always goes back to the same people or keeps kind of, you know, bringing people back that maybe don't deserve that opportunity. And you kind of like, at some point, you just run out of outrage, you know? You just kind of, you get tapped on it. It's like, yep, that's hockey. They're doing it again.
Yep.
Yeah, Mark, you wrote a great column on that, Quenneville. I read it earlier today, and I'm certainly in that cynical mindset that's bordering on apathy, because I don't expect anything different, because they never really take accountability for a sport that preaches accountability to the nth degree and basically beats it into the kids as you come up through the system. To the hypocrisy that you reach once you get to the business levels, because I know they're not the only business that puts profits over people, but at some point you have to look at the lack of diversity of thought across this sport, because it's just unacceptable. It makes people like us that have been around the game for a long time. I grew up playing hockey in Minnesota. I'm like, I don't want to associate with it. Like, I don't have good feelings when I think about it. And it's truly a lost opportunity, because when you think about the sports landscape, And wow, there's places for people, there's ways that you can make them feel included, and they just seem so dead set on appeasing people that have been there for the longest time, and probably it's time to move on and getting some fresh new blood into this thing.
Yeah, well said. I put this in the column. I think the best thing that could happen here is Gary Bettman reinstates Joel Quenneville, and then all 32 teams say, nah, I'm good. I think that would.
But
send
would
the
they
message.
Do it,
this
Mark?
Is not someone
would they
we
do
want
it?
To put in, like, it's never going to happen. He's
eligible
to get hired immediately.
Yes.
But that would send the message that, you know what? We don't want someone with this track record in charge of our young people. You know, but Bill Peters got a job in the juniors, and Joel Quenneville's going to get a job in the NHL, because this is what hockey is, and this is what hockey does.
That's the voice of Mark Lazarus. Mark covers the Blackhawks for The Athletic. I'm not sure if you're in town, but I hope you enjoy your stay in
Vegas.
I'm here. I know you've been here before. I've seen you up in the press box, but hope you enjoy Vegas. And, you know, where does this rate in terms of your favorite cities to come visit?
You know, I've been coming to Vegas since I was, for 20-something years now, and I used to love it here. It's too damn expensive now. You guys are – it's too much. I got two slices of pizza and a soda the other day, yesterday. And it cost me $29. You people are out of control.
Ah, yes.
Coachella, my God.
I can't find a $5 crap table for the life of me.
You know, I took my kid to Lou Malnati's when we were in Chicago, but I told him the real pizza's at Home Run Inn. So, Mark,
go to Pequod's.
Yeah, no problem. Thanks for jumping on with us, man. Have a great day and enjoy the rest of your time in Vegas.
Thanks.
That was Mark Lazarus. Does a great job covering the Blackhawks for The Athletic. Some real deep insight into Connor Bedard and some other things. Look, I don't know about you, Lindsay, but I get excited, and it doesn't matter what sport it is, whether it's the NHL or whether it's the NFL. You and I both cover the Raiders. Whether it's college football or the NBA, when you get to see a young player really early in their career that you know is going to go on to have an amazing career, you get really excited. Even though Pat Mahomes had been in the league a couple times, getting to see him play live, you just get that excitement. And I know, you know, obviously Raider fans don't want to hear that, and Golden Knight fans probably don't want to hear me rave about Connor Bedard, an 18-year-old kid. But it's a real special night. First of all, an Original Six team comes into town, which is always fun for me, because I love the history and nostalgia of an Original Six team. But now you factor in that Original Six team has a kid who many are expecting to have, and it's tremendous pressure, I know, but to have an incredible NHL career. I just get excited about that.
Yeah, this next generation is really going to pop off. Like, in terms of what we're seeing developmental-wise in the creativity and what kids are willing to try, I know sometimes it comes off as cocky. I know sometimes, again, they're not making the best decisions. But the ones that rise to the top and are able to mold their game into a more well-rounded product while maintaining that level of creativity is going to be a great recruiting tool for this entire sport, and it's going to be really exciting to watch. That's why you have shooters like Austin Matthews and Connor Bedard being put into that category, the way that Connor McDavid skates. Like, we can talk about all the people that we don't like and how great they are, like you said, but we haven't seen things like this. They're pushing the limits of what a lot of us thought was possible as a hockey community. And again, I think that harkens back to the lack of imagination. And so it's the first time that I'm going to see him playing live on the ice. I saw him in the elevator during the Stanley Cup final last year when he was kind of around town during everything. And so, but this is a league that is built for someone like him. You know, 10 years ago, the broken jaw would have been just like one thing on a long list of other things, because Martin St. Louis was an outlier himself. And so this is what they've been building this league for the high skill, high excitement, high goal totals. Not great for my peoples, the crease crawlers, but that's why I think it's just so imperative for this league to start doing things the right way, because if they don't, the conversation will always be about the crappy stuff instead of about the amazing things that are being achieved on the ice on a night-by-night basis.
Yeah, and I mean, look, you mentioned some of the young talent, obviously the Hughes brothers.
Yeah, those dudes.
Jack Quinn and Luke. Cale Makar, who we got to see on Sunday. Mm-hmm. Trevor Zegras, who we'll get to see. And Cutter Gauthier, who's going to make his debut. He was a really high draft pick not too long ago. Remember the story with him. He was drafted by the Flyers, didn't want to play for the Flyers, so they traded him away to the Anaheim Ducks. And we get to see him make his NHL debut on Thursday night. So lots of fresh young talent led by Connor Bedard. Bruce Cassidy did speak with the media earlier today, so let's jump into that and hear what Bruce's thoughts are on tonight and some injuries that the Golden Knights are nursing heading into the final two games of the regular season.
You know, we'll probably see tonight a little bit of that answer, to be honest. I think it's easier when you're playing against a team that's bringing the same level of intensity, and who's to say they won't? I mean, they've got young guys in there that are playing for whatever they're playing for. Minutes the next game for there's always different scenarios. So, and you see it every night in this league. When teams are expected to win, they don't. It happens. Now, we should be ready to go. We're trying to fine tune our game. How it affects us in a week from now, this game and the next one, I don't know, but I'd like to win the games playing the right way and then see wherever the chips fall after that, they fall. So, hopefully the players feel the same way. I mean, sometimes I think going into the game, you might be mentally not as sharp as, say, a Colorado, where you're talking about McKinnon and this and that, and they know. But once the puck drops, they're all competitive athletes. You know, typically what should take over, if they've lost a little in their preparation because it's this time of year, they just want to compete because that's who they are. And I think that's typically what happens, and see where that goes. Dallas, we haven't seen in a long time, but we saw them a lot last year, and they haven't changed a lot of personnel. So they'll be catching up, but it'll be quick catching up, I would think. Edmonton, we just saw. Vancouver, we just saw. So Dallas is tomorrow, I believe, against St. Louis. So we'll probably take a peek at that. But maybe some more clarity will come into it tonight too, right? So I think at the same token, you're watching, I would say it's more chunks, Jesse. Like, we get clips of their systems, right? So it's not maybe start to finish game, but you're looking at forechecks, D zone. What have they changed? How have they adjusted anything from what we're typically used to? So I think there'll be a little bit of that starting tomorrow once. But I would like to knock sort of for us say, okay, well, it's not going to be this team or that team. Like Vancouver, I think, can clinch tonight they playing tonight? Calgary? So that might eliminate them if certain things go a certain way. So at the end of the day, behind the scenes, I think all the coaches are starting to compile stuff. But I don't know if we're cramming because, you know, we have seen these teams. It's not like we're going east, a team we haven't seen in forever. I don't know. I think for me last year, we were going in a good place. Team looked good. I don't know if there's a difference. I think every year we're trying to there's pressure to repeat. We didn't have that last year. We had pressure to get in. We got in, and then from there, it's like every team, right? We want to get going. I think there's pressure on every team and every market to perform well. So I don't think it's changed much, to be honest. Teams might be coming. They might be talking about us a little more because we won last year, a little bit less last year. I think we kind of flew under the radar a little bit there, but I think the teams all know which teams are good. And once the puck drops and you get into a series, they're like, okay, these guys are, they're playing for keeps or they're not. And, so I think we look at it that way. Well, yeah, that was his roots in St. Louis originally. I mean, I think Will had 16 last year, so he could certainly get some goals from that line. That's what helped us a lot. But I just put him down there because I didn't like the way Eichel's line was going, so give someone else a shot. Sometimes it's a message to the player, hey, you know, get your game in order. Sometimes it is a verbal, hey, Barb, you're going on this line. I need you to be more meat and potatoes. Let's get back to direct hockey. Play to your strength. You can do that with Jack's line and still, you know, make a few more plays because it's a little more rush oriented at times. So, but yes, he can go down there and perform well there. I think Barbie can play on any line. We've seen that. We didn't know that last year, but we found out, played with two of our more skilled guys, and he can go down and kind of grind and play that game too. So that's a real plus. Yeah, they were good, and they played below the goal line. And I think against Colorado, guys like Taze and Makar, and I know Girard wasn't in and Byram's gone, but in general, that type of, though, you got to get them playing below the goal line so they expend their energy defending, not bombing down the ice, joining the rush, right? I mean, that's how we try to do it with those offensive guys. Well, the choice should be there. I mean, there's no use dumping it in if the other team's undisciplined in their forecheck. If you have ice, take it. We talk about, it's a pretty simple, almost for every game, is there ice in front of their D or behind it? Okay, so if they have good gaps, the ice is open behind it, you got to get it. And they should have good gaps early on because you're fresh, right? You're not tired. You're not chasing the game. Nothing bad's happened early on. So usually that's the way it plays out. Our gaps should be the same way for us. I would expect we'd be breaking a lot of pucks out early. You know, if we're checking well and engaged in the game early, and then things happen during the game where ice opens up. So that's usually, that is always the message, and it typically ends up probably being a 75-25, probably playing behind them. So then puck placement becomes a conversation after that. Okay, is the goalie play the puck well? If he does, you know, what are we going to do to sort of limit his touches? And then you go from there. Has anybody been ruled out?
That was Bruce Cassidy with media availability earlier today, and you heard it there. Last question was by Ken Bulkey of Sinbin, I believe, asked if anyone's been ruled out for the playoffs, and Bruce with a pretty emphatic no. Nobody has been ruled out for the playoffs, so I would imagine that that would include William Carrier, Alex Pietrangelo, and Mark Stone.
We love an adjacent question, right?
Yeah.
Say something without saying something.
Right.
Or say
right.
Nothing without saying something. I don't even know what I'm trying to say. Words.
Words are your friend, Lindsay.
Sometimes.
Yes. Except when they're getting in the way of other words.
Yeah. Yeah. But there's a lot of reasons to be excited for the start of the playoffs, other than the fact that it's the best time of year. It's the best hockey. There's a reason why these guys don't play the same way they do in the playoffs, because if they did, they'd be dead if they did it for 82 games. And so as whatever force the Golden Knights are bringing with them to whoever opponent they have, they're going to have a big-time task, that's for sure.
Yeah, so he did mention Vancouver. They are in action tonight. They're hosting Calgary Flames. 1 point by Vancouver either tonight or tomorrow. I'm sorry, Thursday when they play the Winnipeg Jets. 1 point in either of those two games would eliminate any chance Golden Knights had of meeting them in the first round. However, if they drop both games in regulation and Edmonton wins their next two, I'm sorry, their next one game, I believe. The Oilers only down. I'm sorry, Oilers.
Get out the scenario. Yeah. Get out the flow chart.
We'll do that in the next segment in one-timers. We'll go through the scenarios. Both Vancouver and Edmonton have two games left, as do the Golden Knights. L.A. only has the one game left, and that's against the Chicago Blackhawks on Thursday. We're going to take a break. We'll be right back with one-timers. We'll get you caught up on the clinching scenarios in the East, the story we did mention in Montreal as well. We'll get into something else. We'll see. It's the Vegas Golden Knights Insider Show on Fox Sports Las Vegas.
Carlson left corner, centered, one-timer, score!
It's time for one-timers. One-timers. A quick look at news and notes from around the National Hockey League. Brought to you by Paul Padilaw. It's not about the injury, it's about the recovery.
All right, one-timers, brought to you by Paul Padilaw. Not about the injury, it's about the recovery. And we kind of briefly touched on it earlier in the show with Mark Lazarus, who covers the Blackhawks for The Athletic. But Logan Mailloux, a controversial player, 21 years old, makes his debut tonight. Should say he's making currently his debut for the Montreal Canadiens. To refresh your memory, Logan was drafted a couple years ago in the first round by the Canadiens after he requested to not be drafted. Why did he request to not be drafted? Well, while he was on loan in Sweden, he sent out a photo of a young woman that he had a relationship with intimately, violating many, many moral and ethical and legal statutes in doing so. Word got out, and he was not expected to be drafted. Montreal, at the very end of the first round, drafted him amongst much criticism. He was banned from playing in the OHL because of this. Not a lot of positive things to say. He makes his debut tonight. Lindsay, we talked about it earlier. After the Kyle Beach situation, with Hockey Canada, the situation that unfolded just a couple of weeks ago, five NHL players currently on leave from their teams, and a Canadian player who was playing over in Europe, in Switzerland, had to come back to face the fire from what transpired in the World Juniors.
And that's just one case. Let's not forget about the hush funds, right? Hockey Canada has been stashing to pay out people who come forward as victims and survivors. You're both always. And as we talked about with Mark, disappointing. It's not even really, I think, a great descriptor at this point. It's just disgusting to me, mostly. The Kyle Beach thing situation really rocked me a few years ago when that all transpired, because I honestly don't have the expectation for women to be protected, but when one of their own, right? At some point there has to be a line, but there is no line when it comes to hockey culture. And it's a very distinct, I think, flu, if I'm going to use the metaphor of sickness, that I think is pervasive across our society when it comes to, first of all, not understanding what consent is, and second of all, the dehumanization of others. And I think the sport of hockey, I'm going to write a book about this someday, people. You just wait till I get my life together, about how hockey culture and how we train and what's expected of these players, even down to playing through injuries, creates a mindset of dominance and ultimately has turned into a very specific type of misogyny. And ultimately it takes away from the game, which is the last thing that I would worry about, because we talk a lot about these situations where somebody commits a crime, usually a man in sexual assault situations, and the crime becomes a launching point for change for them. I'm going to be a new person because of this. I've changed. I've done the work. And the story of the victim, of the survivor, just gets brushed to the side. They just become a footnote in the trajectory, or at least the uninterrupted trajectory of someone who has been dubbed valuable for other reasons. This gives me a lot of shades of the Brock Turner situation last decade, the swimmer from Stanford that got into trouble, only went to sentenced to jail for 6 months, served three because the judge didn't want to ruin the guy's life because he made a mistake for 10 minutes. I'm like, well, you think the victim has to live with that? think they're disrupted. I don't have a lot of faith in the state of this league and the leadership of this league. And ultimately, examples have to be set, stands have to be taken, and it's so homogenized when it comes to the way things are presented. You never want to step out of line. We before me, all of that. It's just, it's awful, and it's just another example of a pervasive problem that can't get out of its own way.
You know, I think the issue I have is not so, well, yes, it's obviously with what transpired, but you now have people, including reporters, I won't mention by name, tweeting out that Mayu paid a price. No, no, he didn't. What price did he pay? Because he's in the league. He's already got an assist. He's being celebrated. The Canadians tweeted out dreams come true with him skating his hot lap. So I don't think he actually paid a price. Now, obviously, I hope, I mean, he was 17. I hope that he's...
So was she?
Yeah, she was a kid. I just hope that this kid has learned a very serious lesson, but I don't think the privilege to play in the NHL is something that, like, I look at it this way. If Logan Mayu was a sixth-round talent instead of a first-round talent, would he be in the NHL today? No.
He'd
no,
be
he
in
wouldn't.
Europe.
If even that.
Mm-hmm.
So this idea that privilege doesn't exist, well, it does because the kid's super talented, and that apparently to the Montreal Canadiens was more important than his transgressions and his criminal activity.
Right. And whether we like it or not, the best way, one of the most effective ways to help combat misogyny, sexism, victimization of groups is to raise boys right and to hold them accountable and to have that standard set from a very young age. And I know that some people, he's a good kid. We raise them right. We teach them right from wrong. Do you? Do you? Because when they get in these locker rooms and you get groups of people of four or more, the way that we interact with one another changes, and it's very easy to go along with whatever else is doing. It's not just about being the perpetrator. It's about being someone that just lets it go on. And so any person, any little guy that I've coached, I've said to them, you know, just be, if somebody's doing something wrong, you got to call it out. You got to stop it. It's on you to be the person to be a protector for people that might not have that ability to do that for themselves. And that's the most effective way that I can come up with it, because you could say women need to protect themselves, women need to not dress provocatively, they need to, it just, we're just trying to exist, so leave us alone. And if you can't, just I have nothing for you. I have nothing for you.
Now, I don't know how we transition, but
we will
transition to playoff clinching scenarios and a couple of teams looking to potentially clinch tonight. We know the Islanders clinched the seventh playoff spot out of the East last night. We may, if we have time, we'll talk about them. But Washington Capitals, they currently are the team that all they need to do is defeat the Philadelphia Flyers in any fashion, overtime shootout, and they will take the eighth spot in the playoffs.
Shocking.
Well, right now, they are actually level with the Philadelphia Flyers, with about a minute to go in the second period. So you may be asking yourself, well, what happens if the Capitals lose? Well, if they lose in regulation, they are out. They're eliminated. That would lead us to the Detroit Red Wings. If the Capitals lose and the Red Wings win in any fashion, Capitals have to lose in regulation. The Detroit Red Wings would take that eighth spot. Well, the Detroit Red Wings right now, at the end of the second period, trail the Montreal Canadiens by a score of 3-2. So that potentially leads us to the third team, the Pittsburgh Penguins. They are not in action tonight, but they're eliminated if either Washington or Detroit win in any fashion. However, if Detroit or Washington win, then Pittsburgh would still have an opportunity to potentially clinch. Or if they lose, I should say, then the Penguins would have an opportunity to clinch. I know this is unbelievably confusing. And somehow, the Philadelphia Flyers despite the fact that they are the fourth team here, if Detroit gets a point against Montreal, they're eliminated. But they also need to beat the Washington Capitals. Otherwise, they are eliminated. All this says right now is I have no idea who the hell's coming out of the East. It's unbelievably chaotic. Nobody seems to want that eighth spot. But somebody.
Well, they do. It's just been a real big struggle. Deficits have been made up. I'm shocked that the Capitals and Penguins are even in the conversation.
The Capitals, by the way, Alex Ovechkin scored tonight for them. His 31st of the season. I feel like he had five at
like home. 3 weeks ago.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, you know, we were kind of throwing dirt on him, saying, he's not going to catch Gretzky. He's done, blah, blah, blah. It's over. Well, Ovi kind of showing us that he still has it now with 31 goals on the season, trying to get the Caps into the playoffs. I can't believe that they're the team that controls their own destiny.
Right.
Like, I would not have expected that at this point of the season, but here we are, the Capitals right now level with the Flyers. So they just ended the second period, so a huge, huge third period coming up for those two teams. The New York Islanders clinched last night, and it's not controversial. They did it the right way, but a lot of people pretty upset that they did clinch because they only have 28 regulation wins on the season.
A damn point system.
Yeah. So there's a bit of a push on Twitter, I would say, not so much by the league, to change it to where you get 3 points for a regulation win, 2 points for an overtime win, 1 point for a shootout, and the losing team gets 0 points.
Yeah. They need to revamp so much. But they're always tinkering, right? It's just usually with goalie equipment.
Yeah.
Okay, we need to focus the attention. We're focused on the wrong stuff.
Yeah.
Per usual.
You have a team with 28 regulation wins in the playoffs. Meanwhile, just to give you an idea of how bad that is, the Columbus Blue Jackets, who are the worst team in the Eastern Conference, 23 regulation wins.
They only have five more wins
than
them.
The New Jersey Devils.
I was going to say, it's kind of shocking, too, because the Islanders, I mean, they made a coaching change midseason.
Patrick Waugh, yeah.
Yeah, our guy.
The Islanders with, or I'm sorry, the Devils, 38 regulation, I'm sorry, 33 regulation wins. They're not going to be in the playoffs. But the Islanders with 28 are in the playoffs.
Nobody's happy.
No.
Hockey 101.
That's going to do it for One-Timers, brought to you by Paul Padilaw. Not about the injury, it's about the recovery. We'll be back to wrap up the show after this. This is the BGK Insider Show on Fox Sports Las Vegas.
That was One-Timers. Brought to you by Paul Padilaw. It's not about the injury, it's about the recovery. We're back to the Findlay Chevrolet Studio and the BGK Insider Show with Darren Millard and Ryan Wallace.
Final go-around here on the BGK Insider Show. Boy, this is normally where we have Catching Up with Chapman. I don't think I've ever heard that rejoin, but I kind of like the music.
I kind of felt like I was in a club hallway and there's a lot of lasers and splatter paint.
with the skeleton costume.
In Berlin. Right?
Yeah. Definitely not in Vegas.
It's a Berlin rave. Yeah. You know.
So Golden Knights taking on the Chicago Blackhawks, third and final time this season. Second time we get to see Connor Bedard here. Fans starting to file in. I already see a bunch of people in red jerseys. So I don't know what the weather's like in Chicago, but I'm sure they're happy to be here where the
temps. It's like 86 here. This is the weirdest time of the year when, like, I get up at 4:30 to go do the morning tailgate on Raider Nation Radio.
Yep.
So it's chilly, and I wear, like, four layers and a scarf, and then I leave and it's warm. And then you got to come here to the hockey rink when it's 86, but also still dress warm because guess what has to get cranked up when it starts to get warm outside.
Yeah, see, I'm lucky. I live on the second floor, so we sleep with our sliding glass door is in the bedroom, so we sleep with that open. Plus, we have the pups, two pups now, so they enjoy the cooler air blowing in.
Mm-hmm.
And Mrs. Chapman, not so much a fan of the door being open because she gets cold very easily. She's a very tiny girl, so she gets cold very easily. But me, with all the excess body fat. I don't.
You're a furnace, aren't you?
I'm like a walrus.
You're burning up. Baby. I wasn't expecting a Jonas Brothers reference. But
oh, see, I was. I guess I'm old because I was thinking of a Madonna song called "Burning Up."
Well, we can all converge under one united umbrella of burning up.
But just to lay it out for you, Golden Knights. With two wins, they will end up third in the Pacific. Will end up playing either the Edmonton Oilers or the Vancouver Canucks. They lose one of the next two games in any fashion. Basically, they need 4 points. If they lose or don't get 4 points, they will play the Dallas Stars in the first round the playoffs. So, big two games for the Golden Knights coming up. Two very winnable games, I would say. Opportunity to go out on a winning note in the regular season. Again, if you're just joining us, no Chandler Stephenson, no Anthony Mantha, no Petrangelo, no William Carrier in the lineup for the Golden Knights. Jonas Rombierg joining the roster tonight. He'll get another opportunity to play. I like Jonas a lot. Paul Cotter, Pavel Dorofeyev also in the lineup. Michael Amadio, who'd been healthy scratch the last couple nights, he will also be in the lineup. Alec Martinez will also insert in. Ben Hutton back to the bench. Ben Hutton, a guy who has played extremely well, I think, when he's been called upon. But that's about going to do it for us on the VGK Insider Show. I want to thank Mark Lazarus from The Athletic for joining us. I'm going to be handing it off to myself on the pregame show. Ryan Wallace will be back next week for the VGK Insider Show. And by that time, we'll know who the Golden Knights are playing in the playoffs, what the schedule is. What we do know is they're going to. What we do know is that they're going to be starting on the road, and no matter who they play. So
that's all right.
I think they're okay with that.
Establish the foundation.
Yeah, I think, you know, for a team like this, starting on the road doesn't bother them because I think they're well-seasoned enough to know that you win one of those two games, home ice means nothing at that point. Mm-hmm. You now have home ice if you steal one of those first two games. So, again, big shout-out to Mark Lazarus for jumping on with us. First time I've ever had the chance to chat with him. So. It's pretty cool. Lindsay, thank you for joining me.
Anytime, buddy.
Thanks to Bobby back in the studio for keeping us from going off the rails, and Stacy for keeping us on the air. VGK pregame show coming up in about 5 minutes here on Fox Sports Las Vegas. Have a great night, everybody.